Some he spent walking, enjoying the warmth and the sunlight. Twice he went to the ocean to watch the fish from the docks and to wash off the suffocating humidity in the cold northern waters. He went to visit the marker on Callie's grave at the top of the hill. If they had a future, a stone monument would be erected in its place, but for now it was nothing more than a wooden pole. When Blaze and Lyra weren't busy in their rooms, he spent time with them. Lyra insisted on teaching them some of her most desperate grappling techniques. Dante appreciated it, and went through her drills and sparring with as much energy as he could muster, but a thick fatalism had settled over his shoulders. 2 or 3 weeks from now, it would all be over. What could he learn in 2 or 3 weeks that would make any difference? At this phase, what could it possibly matter? Rather than depressing him, this feeling liberated him. He began to see the small things, the sharpness of the leaves backlit by sunlight, the skitter of sand crabs dislodged by the break of the waves, the shine of sweat on a woman's neck as she lifted her arms to clip clothes to a line. At times, the sharpness of the world stole his breath. These sights were everywhere, thousands of them in a single day. There weren't enough eyes to see them all. Perhaps that was the worst of what was to come. Soon enough, those eyes, already too few, would be lessened by another few thousand, leaving that many fewer witnesses to the world's golden wonder. And sometimes life felt no different at all. The specter of war shuttered businesses across the city, but had no appreciable effect on Narashtovic's public houses. If anything, they grew more boisterous than ever, with laughing drunks spilling out the front doors by noon and by night. It was just such a place Dante and Blaze found themselves on one of those summer nights when the sun threatens to never set at all. It was past 9 o'clock, by the cathedral bells, yet the sun still hovered above the western forests, splashing the tavern with yellows and reds. To combat the too snug humidity, Blaze ordered mugs of summer ales, light and sweet and basement cooled. They drank within the shade of the wall, fanned by the breeze through the open windows. "We could tell the redshirts we surrendered last month." Blaze wiped foam from his upper lip. "Just tell them to turn around and go home. Maybe by the time they got all the way to Setevan, they'd be too tired and sweaty to bother coming back." "Sure," Dante said. "Hoist a few of the king's banners over the citadel. Smile a bit. Offer them our nicest teas." "I'm not giving them any tea." "Our third finest, then. Those barbarians will never notice the difference." "Consider it added to the list." Blaze appeared to be taking actual notes. He squinted over his parchment, lips moving soundlessly. He dotted the sheet with his quill. "Now then. Alternately, we burn the city to the ground ourselves, quite safely, of course, then spread the rumor Aron's already taken his vengeance on his treacherous servants." Dante sipped his beer. "No good. That would just entice them to march in and piss on the ashes, which I assume we'd be hiding in." "You can't hide in ashes. One wrong sneeze and the jig is up." "Fine. We'll hide in smoke instead. Very difficult to piss effectively on smoke." Blaze's quills scribbled. "Piss on smoke. It's called the Dead City, right? Maybe we can convince them it's full of deadly, deadly ghosts. Why don't you build a few tunnels beneath the city for us to move around through?"
"Could be useful," Dante said.
Blaze snapped his fingers. "Got it. Build big old pits and camouflage them so the redshirts just march right into them like giant tiger traps." "That could work on the front ranks, but after they've fallen, that will be the end of it. Anyone who's too stupid to not wander into a giant hole would have already stabbed themselves to death trying to eat dinner." "So, pair it with a giant distraction. A 200-foot naked lady blazed across the sky. They'll be too busy goggling at the heavens to see the hole right in front of them."
Dante took a long drink. This is not getting us any closer to not being murdered.
You've gotten pretty good at digging ditches without a shovel. Aren't you? Why don't you bury their whole army under an avalanche?
I don't have that kind of power. Anyway, we'd have to lure them under a giant cliff or something, and Narashtovic is sadly lacking in giant cliffs.
Dante rubbed his eyes. What did we learn at Dolandon?
Blaze narrowed his eyes.
That explosions are fun, and hordes of armed men on horseback aren't.
Cavalry will still be a problem. The city's too big to block all the streets.
What can we do about that?
Blaze drove his finger down to the table.
That's when you spring the tiger trap.
That might work.
What else?
Man, I don't know.
How many tiger trap-related ideas can one man come up with?
It pains me to say this, but will you forget the tiger traps? So we don't have any bombs. We don't have any loons.
But what do we have that they don't?
Blaze shrugged.
Two giant sets of balls.
Dante rolled his eyes.
Unless we plan to roll them down the hill at the Red Shirts, I don't see how that's useful.
And one giant penis. Is that all we've got? Tiger traps and courage?
Blaze drank contemplatively.
Seems to me the real lesson in Dolandum is when they've got 10,000 men, tricks can only take you so far.
Narashtovic's only got a standing army of about 2,000, Dante said, and half of those troops are more of a sitting army as recently as last year. Their training's not going to match Setevan's soldiers. I don't know how many men Ollivander will bring back. A few hundred? At least they'll know which end of a sword is which.
That's more than can be said for some of the citizens we've conscripted.
Oh, well, Blaze said.
Oh, well?
As in, oh, well, not much we can do about it now, but have a drink.
Blaze did just that, then laughed.
Sorry. Is that obnoxious? For some reason, I just can't convince myself to care.
Dante grinned.
Same here. It's like this is happening to another person.
Another person who I also don't care about.
Have we seen too much? Become jaded to even the worst horrors.
I don't think that's it.
Blaze stood, mug in hand. I mean, if I find out the keg is empty, I'm still going to scream pretty damn loud.
That was the last they spoke of the invasion that night. Dante spent the next few days wandering around the city looking for opportune places to sink tunnels and tiger traps.
Hammers rapped constantly as men boarded up their houses. Grocers began to shutter their empty shops, too. The remaining citizens had begun to hoard, buying up all foodstuffs in sight. Carve assigned the monks to update the decades-old system of rationing Narashtovic's granary. Dante began a tunnel to link the citadel's basements to the far-off catacombs of the Carnotarium. An escape hatch, should worse come to worst. Ollivander rode into the city, the banners of Bardon flying from his troop of 120 horsemen, and another 600 foot soldiers gathered from the east. He'd heard the gist of the recent infighting. Wint's betrayal, the attempt to set the council against itself, Dante's proof and Wint's subsequent suicide, yet was still shocked to hear the story in whole.
It sounds like the king's already half-ruined, Narashtovic, he said in his steady baritone. Now he sends his army to finish the job.
Think they'll have enough to do it, Dante said.
From the steps to the citadel's front door, Ollivander gazed over the men being shuffled across the courtyard for the barracks and stables. There were clearly too many. Some would have to be quartered in the abandoned houses beyond the gates.
I got fewer men than I'd like, Ollivander said. But we may have enough. If the walls hold, if the people fight back, if the council, depleted as it is, holds strong.
The goateed man glanced down at Dante.
What do you think?
I have no idea. Something this big is beyond my capacity to predict. Ollivander grinned.
You admit not knowing something? Are we sure Wince didn't kill you and replace you with an impostor before he died?
Perhaps I'm getting older. Dante scowled. But I suppose you'd know better than me.
Ollivander snorted, but was pleased to see Dante and the guards progress drilling the conscripts.
He took over from there to march the fresh soldiers around Narashtovic's boulevards, leaving Dante with even less to do. Men toiled in the streets from sunup to sundown, dragging rubble across the thoroughfares, erecting wooden walls with spiked prongs at key junctures.
Dante finished up his tunnel and, after consultation with Ollivander, set to work on a tiger trap just before the intersection of a deliberately unblocked street, halfway between the Pride Gate and the Inn Gate. There, he convinced the stones to roll away, the dirt to part and hold. By the next day, it was 20 feet deep, 10 across, and a full 40 feet wide. Men sawed thin planks and laid them over the gap. It would hardly divert the enemy, but with a little luck, it might cripple a cavalry charge at a key moment. The latest scouts returned. The king's army was marching north. If they didn't slow down, they'd be on Narashtovic within 3 days. The buzz of activity became an ear-drilling whine. Dante went to the outskirts of the city to ruin the roads, littering them with ditches and holes. The day before the red shirts were expected to arrive, a man ran in from the outlying houses, screaming and waving his staff above his head. "They're coming! The enemy's here! The king's army is upon us!" The nether leapt unbidden to Dante's hands. His heart leapt unbidden to his throat. A quarter mile of low houses blocked the view between himself and the southbound road. He jogged to the road and headed out among the deserted homes, many of which had been abandoned decades and decades ago during the repeated sackings of Narashtovic. Some were no more than empty lots, weeds growing among the teeth-like foundation stones. He peeled off his shirt, a light doublet emblazoned with the sigil of Narashtovic. The red shirts might ignore a shirtless commoner. An official of Narashtovic would face a much more critical reception. He passed a row of pine trees, their scent thick on the sun-baked air. 300 yards down the road, a legion of men marched into the hinterlands of the city, hundreds strong. He turned to dash back to the walls and raise the alarm, then stopped dead in his tracks. The men weren't wearing uniforms. There was something wrong with their builds, too. Their heads were too high, their shoulders too bulky. Dante turned to meet them. He carried the nether, too. But as he grew closer, he let it fizzle away. When he saw the man at their front, he broke into a grin.
"Morn!" he cried. "I thought you were dead!"
"Surprise!" Morn's beard was thicker. Beneath smears of soot and dirt, his bare arm showed fresh scars and half-healed cuts.
"Are you all right? How have you been?"
"If the period of my life before the last few weeks can be considered good, the last few weeks should be classified as not good."
"Same here. I was imprisoned for murder, but it turned out I didn't do it." Dante smacked his thigh, smiling so hard his cheeks hurt.
"What's happening in the territories?"
Morn tipped his head. "A lot of losses. A lot of deaths. For the red shirts, too. But those creatures multiply like they're not actually humans, but flies in crafty human disguises."
"I know what you mean. They're supposed to be here tomorrow."
"Supposed? Did you invite them? Because it would be strange to invite someone in to burn down your city and forcibly impregnate your women."
"It was an accidental invitation," Dante said. "I believe it was left on His Lordship Cassander's doorstep during some ridiculous hunt for a make-believe bow."
Morn smiled for the first time since his arrival. "The world is very odd, isn't it?"
He had some 400 Norrin with him. The 9 Pines and Dreaming Bears, along with the remnants of 5 other clans and a hodgepodge of survivors separated from their warrior families during the skirmishes ongoing across the territories. Morn's troop would be no small addition to the city's numbers. Blaze clapped when he saw Morn. Lyra gave him her small, polite smile. Many of the guards stared. Norrin freemen weren't uncommon in Narashtovik, but few lived in the city on a permanent basis. They probably hadn't strolled into the city in such numbers in generations. Dante offered to put them up in the row houses just beyond the citadel walls, but Morn refused, electing to encamp in a park down by the bay instead. That night, the four of them went to a public house, as they had so often months before. But something had changed. Silence stalked their halting conversation. Even Blaze was haunted by it, smiling vaguely and nodding distantly when addressed. As soon as they finished swapping news of the day since Dolandan, they paid more attention to their beers than to each other. Scouts came and went throughout the morning. Dante stayed close to the citadel and the news the riders brought there. In the morning, the red shirts were 10 miles away. By noon, they'd cut that to 5. Guard commanders shouted orders across the courtyard, directing their troops to the walls. The 3 sets of doors to the Pride Gate were sealed. Horns squawked from across the city. Young men hauled arrows and swords and bows and spears to the walls. Ollivander saddled the cavalry and ran sweeps of the outskirts in search of enemy scouts and sneak attacks. Mid-afternoon, Narashtovik scouts reported the king's army had encamped in the pine forests a mile from the city. The smoke of scores of campfires rose from the black woods. As the army showed no signs of coming any further that day, Ollivander pulled most of the men from the Pride Gate but doubled the scouts beyond it. In the never-ending dusk, Dante went to his balcony to read and soothe his nerves. Instead, in the warmth of the setting sun, he fell asleep. He woke in total darkness and bolted to his feet, not because of any horns or fires or signs of war, but because he'd meant to see his friends before whatever came with the morning. Now it was too late. He paced his room, angry with himself. A few minutes later, a door clicked in the hallway. He poked out his head, hoping to see Blaze, but Lyra strode down the hall instead, wearing shorts, a thin shirt, and a knife. "Is Blaze awake?" he said. She shook her head. "Wore him out." "I'm sure he's as happy about that as I am unhappy to hear about it." She laughed. She didn't do that often. "What did you need to talk to him about?" Dante shrugged. "Nothing much. Impending death, the end of the world, that sort of thing." "Are you nervous about tomorrow?" "Does feeling the urge to barf up your skeleton count as nervous?" "That depends. Have you done anything to provoke your skeleton?" Dante laughed. "I need to ask you something." She raised an eyebrow. "If you really need to ask, you wouldn't ask whether you could. Do you two love each other? Does that matter?" "It probably does to Blaze." She answered without hesitation, "Yes." "Good," Dante said. "Then you don't owe me any longer."
"Says who?"
"You owe him, and he owes you." Lyra tipped back her chin. "I can have more than one due to your loyalty. He knows who I am. I won't change for him." Dante scowled in the darkness of the hallway. "What if I told you I value his life above mine? So the highest service you can pay me is to keep him safe tomorrow." "Then I'd call you a liar."
"Don't you dare."
She'd been flirting with a smile, but quickly cast it aside.
"Are you serious?"
"It's probably safer to pretend that I am."
"Liar's paws, you're intense sometimes."
Lyra stared him down.
"You saved my life. That kind of debt isn't penciled onto a ledger. It's chiseled on stone. Unerasable."
His jaw tightened. This war probably would have come eventually. The Norrin would never stand to be enslaved forever. It's a war I still believe in, but I share too much of the blame for why it's happening here and now. If that caused any harm to come to him.
"Then what?"
I don't know.
I don't either.
She nodded once.
I'll keep him safe.
She drew her knife and cut her right palm. Her eyelids twitched. She handed him the knife. He followed suit, but had taken a blade to his own skin too often to flinch.
What's this? He said. It's how we seal agreements in the islands.
They shook. Her hand was warm and wet. When their hands dropped, he sealed both wounds with a balm of nether. She flicked her hand, glancing down sharply.
He smiled.
No sense going to war with a cut on your sword hand.
I wouldn't have noticed.
She smiled back.
I'll see you in the morning.
She walked toward the stairwell and headed down. On a whim, Dante decided to roam the city himself. He descended to the basement and took his tunnel to the Carnotarium. There, he emerged into the sweaty night and climbed the cemetery to the hill. Callie was there, so was Larimore. Samarand and the council members who died beneath the white tree were there too, although he'd forgotten where their tomb stood. He nodded in whatever direction they may be in and continued up the grassy slope.
He wasn't here for them, anyway.
It smelled like fresh leaves and a warm sea. Bugs of all kinds chirped and whirred. Beneath the ground, they silently ate. He touched the nether in the soil, felt the blank spaces of the coffins embedded within it. Fires twinkled in the forest to the south. At the crown of the hill, Dante tipped back his head. The stars twinkled just as brightly. Joris, too, the pole star, the crux of Aron's mill. Some people prayed to Aron, god of death, god of cycles. But Dante didn't. He knew the ancient god would pay him no mind. So he hoped instead. When he finished, he returned to his room and slept dreamlessly. He was up with dawn's first deathly blue hints. He dressed, put on his metal armbands and his sword, and went to the walls of the Pride Gate without stopping for breakfast he might not be able to keep down. The city was as silent as a snowfall. In the grey of the mounting dawn, Ollivander was already atop the Pride Gate, watching the city, as if preparing to grab it by the throat.
"You didn't have the walls in Dolandon, did you?" the middle-aged man said.
Dante shook his head. "We built a rampart, but that just encouraged them to come in through the side instead."
"I think we'll hold," Ollivander said, as if convincing himself.
"I think we'll spill too much blood for them to push through. They'll siege. Callie's been stocking up provisions for years. Will it be enough? Will the Norren who still survive in the territories push back hard enough to force the king to leave us in peace? That, I think, is how we do this."
"A siege? You mean I'll finally get to stay in Narashtovik for longer than 2 weeks?"
Ollivander's trim beard quirked with a smile. "Don't get ahead of yourself. Someone will have to head the daring runs through enemy territory." Here I thought there would be a silver lining to Callie's passing, that I would no longer be called upon every time we need to do something ridiculous.
"I thought you and Blaze did these things because you liked them."
"Maybe," Dante admitted, "but even the wicked can use a vacation." As the sun rose, proper light scared away the ghostly land of pre-dawn. It was already hot enough to have Dante sweating. Morn brought the Norren to the walls. They stuck together, saying little. A scout pounded up the road to the gates. The red shirts had broken camp a quarter hour ago. Ollivander sounded the horns. Soldiers jogged from the inner ring of the city to take up positions on the outer walls. Several members of the council joined Dante and Ollivander. The others were spread out among the miles-long sweep of the Pride Gate, ready to react to any enemy sorcerers.
"What's going on?"
Blaze said when he appeared on the wall a few minutes later. Boy, it looks like you guys are gearing up for a fight or something.
Nothing of the sort, Dante said. We were just going to sit down with the red shirts and discuss Alan Don's transubstantiated ethics and the deceit of Carvajal. A war's only broken out over that twice.
I'm not even going to pretend to pay attention to that.
Atop the Pride Gate's 20-foot walls, which in turn stood halfway up the rising slope of the city, Dante's line of sight ran to the edge of the city with few obstructions. It was from this clear vantage that he watched the king's army enter the city. At first they flowed blackly from the forest, a dark, sluggish, molasses-like mass. That flow broke into separate streams, as thousands of men diverted into four columns, each of which took a different one of the four main north-south roads to this flank of the Pride Gate. Once this mass drew within a mile, its individual features grew more distinct. Red banners flapped above ranks of swordsmen wearing hauberks and spearmen clad in the oaky hues of boiled leather. A line of warhorses strode at the head of the main column, riders masked in plates of solid metal that glinted in the summer morning sun. The stomp of their steps rolled through the sticky air, rhythmic, maddening. A planned avalanche. Dolandon had been different. Dante had only seen the boats, not the army's main body. The gathering of so many men intent on murdering them was eerie and awesome and terrifying.
"Is it too late to tell them the city's full of deadly ghosts?" Blaze said.
"We may get a chance to find out," Dante said. "I think I'm about to start moaning."
Narashtovic's commanders hollered last-minute orders.
To Dante's left, wall-top defenders shuffled nearer the gates to meet the attackers. The king's army continued on, step by step, eating up what little distance remained between them and the walls. Close enough now to make out individual faces, to smell their miasma of travel and sweat. The front line stepped within easy bowshot and stopped cold. The waves of men behind them rippled to a halt. A lone rider emerged from the front lines, his warhorse stepping as lightly as the summer rains. Some 10 yards in front of his troops, he halted and turned sidelong. Instead of the king's red, he wore pine green.
"I will now deliver the king's terms," he said. His voice was soft, almost soothing, yet it carried on the air like the streamers of morning mist that blew in from the bay and threaded through the city streets. It was a cold voice, but that wasn't what gave Dante goosebumps.
"Son of a god's damned bitch!"
"What?" Blaze said.
Dante pointed below.
"That!"
Before the Pride Gate, the man in green tilted back his head to regard the black-clad troops lining the walls.
"Surrender! Lay down your arms. Swear fealty to King Mordigan of Gask. Disband the Council of the Sealed Citadel. Hand over all Norrin within Narashtovic to the custody of the king and his appointed executors. Turn over control of the city to me, Cassander of Beckenridge."
"What the hell?" Blaze said. "We killed that guy."
"Apparently, he got better," Dante said.
"You've met Cassander, yes?"
Carve said from beside them.
"Sure," Dante said, "in the sense we've spent the last few months trying repeatedly to kill each other."
Carve smiled ruefully.
"Then perhaps you'd like to deliver our response."
Down in the street, Cassander pulled off his steel helmet. One of his eyes drooped. A mass of pale scars surrounded the socket. Dante straightened and advanced to the edge of the wall.
"I am afraid to inform you that we are unable to accept your terms on the grounds that the only man in Narashtovic with the authority to accept them has been killed. As you ordered. As the king authorized."
Dante did his best to look pained.
It is with great sorrow, then, that I am left with a single response. Fuck you and the horse you rode in on.
Cassander bobbed his head.
Very well.
He wheeled his horse. As he returned to the ranks, he flung both hands above his head, open-palmed. Ether streaked from 6 points within the Red Shirt's ranks, glaring, as hot and white and angry as liquid steel. Dante didn't have time to shout. The ether crashed into the walls. The doors of the Pride Gate came tumbling down.
Chapter 28 Stone roared and groaned and crackled and burst. When Dante moved soil and stone, it was smooth, silent, graceful. The Aethermancer's attack was not. Instead, it was a hammer blow of pure force, the combined power of Setevan's strongest sorcerers blasting the gates and the surrounding stonework straight to the ground. Dante fell with them. Men shrieked, Netho whipped from Narashtivik's priests, too late to stop the attack, but perhaps in time to punish those who had made it. The floor disappeared beneath Dante. He tumbled through the open air, dust and pebbles pinging his face. As soon as he understood what was happening, he hit the ground. His spine jarred. His elbow cracked. His head whiplashed into the cobblestones. Fist-sized stones rained down around him, bouncing from the street. It was very quiet. The shouts, the screams, were they coming from another world? It was so gauzy, too. The dust was part of it. He could taste it, gritty and slightly bitter. But the gauze was more than the dust. Things were fuzzy, soft and smeary at the edges. He tried to rise and flopped back down. His elbow hurt. Dimly, foggily, but it hurt. So did his head. So did his back.
Mourn, he heard Blaze call. Take the Norrin and hold the gap. We have to hold them off while our men retreat.
Ollivander's baritone barked across the screams. Black-clad soldiers ran uphill deeper into the city. To the inn-gate? Already? Why would they fall back so fast? Dante gritted his teeth and swung himself to a sitting position. Towering Norrin thundered past him, swords and shields in hand, bellowing. Finally, Dante saw the hole in the wall, the very large hole where there had once been gates, and the tide of red shirts swirling in through it. The Norrin met them head on. Steel clashed. The screams changed pitch, became shriller, pained. Men died, cut down by the Norrin's pounding blades. Blood slicked their still-settling dust.
Come on!
Someone hooked a hand into his armpit. Blaze grimaced down at him, face coated with dust and sweat. Someone else took his other arm. Lyra. Together, they hauled him to his feet, which were perplexingly reticent to follow his demands. Narashtivik's soldiers continued the retreat to the safety of the inn-gate. Supported on both sides, Dante stumbled along behind them. The sounds of faded battle, replaced by the thump of scores of boots and the heavy breathing of men in full stride. The retreat was orderly enough,
as orderly, at any rate, as could be hoped for, in a movement involving thousands of men with swords, running away from thousands of enemy men with swords.
It was good they'd practiced the maneuver, otherwise the battle might already be over. They maintained their orderliness at the inn-gate, where soldiers waited to pass through its narrow gates. Heads popped up along the walls. Men took up bows, knocking arrows. Pain throbbed in Dante's elbow and head. That was good. He was stepping out of the fog.
"I think I can walk on my own now," he said. Blaze and Lyra exchanged a look, then gradually lessened their hold on him until they were certain his feet were steady to fend for themselves. The three of them joined the crowd of soldiers in the wide plaza, waiting to pass through the gates. Dante glanced downhill.
"Did what I think just happened, really just happened?"
"You mean the part where they blew down the wall like an angry god?" Blaze said. "I thought it was you priestly boys' job to stop the enemy wizards from ruining our day."
"They were too fast. Normally these battles have a lot of preliminary pageantry, speeches and the waving of flags and whatnot.
They hit us the same way we hit the fort at Burrell.
Those assholes."
"Are you sure you're all right?" Lyra said. "Heads shouldn't bleed. Yours is."
Dante touched the throbbing at the back of his skull. His fingers probed warm, matted hair. He twiddled them in front of his face.
"Well, I don't see any brains."
"Not a surprise," Blaze said. Lyra nodded to the ingate and the black-clad soldiers passing through it.
"Why won't they just blow up this wall too?"
"They'll try," Dante said, "but they've already spent a lot of their power, and if you're alert, it's easy enough to stop. We'll have to post our people around the wall. Be vigilant."
Within 2 minutes, the last of the troops were filing through to the other side. The three of them milled at the rear. Back in the direction of the Pride Gate, the Norren ran into view, long legs carrying them ahead of whatever pursued them.
"Looks like our cue to get inside," Blaze said.
They crossed beneath the shadow of the gates. Dante lingered, scanning the approaching Norren for Morn. The warriors reached the plaza. Hoofbeats thundered to Dante's left.
"Oh, shit."
"What?" Blaze said. Dante rushed into the square. Cavalry galloped down the cross street toward the plaza. They'd be on the Norren in seconds. Morn and his men would be slaughtered. Dante sprinted straight for the horsemen. He dropped to his knees, skidding across the cobblestones, and slapped his hand against the ground. The earth shook. A trench leapt apart just feet in front of the cavalry. With no time to react, the first line of riders fell headlong into the narrow pit. Horses' eyes went white and wild. The second row of riders tried to jump or turn, but fell instead, ensnaring those behind them in a tangle of reins and legs. Dante raced back toward the gates. The Norren beat him there, funneling through. Horses screamed. Men, too. Down the road, red-shirt infantry jogged into view, bound for the ingate. The gates creaked, shuddering as they began to close. Dante hurried through. The portcullis clanked down behind him. The Norren stood inside, hands on knees as they caught their breath. Dante found Morn among them. A bright gash trickled blood down his left arm. Morn jerked his head in the direction of the felled horses.
"That was nice of you."
"You're too useful to lose this early in the day."
Dante glanced among the clan warriors.
"Lose many?"
"How many is many? A clan's worth. Most days, that is many. Today I think it will be a blade of grass on the plain."
"That's a poetic way to put it."
Up on the walls, bows twanged. Enemy arrows sailed overhead and clattered in the square inside the ingate. Dante pointed to a tent across the square where men in robes came and went.
"Take your wounded to the monks, and thank you, Morn."
Morn nodded and grunted at his troops. They headed for the tent, some leaning on the shoulders of their clan brothers and sisters. In the shadow of the wall, Blaze and Lyra hugged briefly. Dante climbed the stairs to the top, keeping his head low, and hunkered behind the safety of a Merlin. Around him, men stood, fired, ducked, and repeated. Dante risked a look through a crenel. Redshirts busily pushed broad wooden barriers into firing range, setting up beachheads for their archers, while the bulk of their troops stayed clear of the no man's land in front of the gates. Dante stilled his mind, wary for the first flicker of ether, but none came. Either the enemy sorcerers were biding their time, or they'd snuck off to find an unmanned section of the wall to attack next. Did the city have enough priests, monks, and minor talents to protect the ingate against attack?
How could they possibly keep watch over every foot of the wall?
The warmth of the morning became the heat of the day. Dante drank a full flask of water and wiped his mouth, gasping. The king's men continued to build their makeshift barricades and exchange arrows with the defenders. Their assault was not particularly effective. It struck Dante as more of an effort to keep Narashtivik's soldiers occupied than to pose any serious threat. Dante healed the split on the back of his scalp, stopping as soon as he stopped the bleeding. This day, he'd need every scrap of nether he could command. Two cassocked monks tromped up the steps. He assigned them to keep both eyes on the battlefield below, then jogged along the westward curve of the wall in a low crouch. After traveling just a couple hundred yards, he could almost forget a battle for the city was raging behind him. Down one street, the bodies of a dozen ununiformed civilians lay across a handful of dead red shirts. Further along, men jogged down the street at a cant, buckets of well water splashing their knees as they hurried to a house smoldering down the block. Dante stretched his mind as far as it would go, letting his other senses fade. Away from the arrows of the enemy, he straightened to his full height and strolled past scattered soldiers on watch for sudden attacks. Something glimmered as briefly as a wisp of sunlight reflected from a rippling stream. Dante got down on hands and knees and crawled along behind the merlins. The glimmer repeated in his mind, with the ethereal glow of the shifting spots he saw whenever he closed his eyes. He stalked on. The lights in his head increased in frequency and intensity. He peeked past the wall. Not 50 feet away, a woman hunkered against the base of the ingate's wall. She was dressed plainly, no red, no uniform of any kind, but a steady stream of ether pulsed from her to the wall. Pebbles clattered against the ground. Dante drew on the nether, waiting in his drying blood, and fired it toward the center of her head. Engaged in her sabotage, she didn't notice until the last second. Ether flashed wildly, enough to knock his stride off course, not enough to make it fizzle away. Instead of piercing her skull, the nether slashed into the side of her ribs. She dropped, hard to the ground. Blood poured into the cracks between cobbles. She clamped her hands to the wound. Ether glittered. Dante snuffed it out with a wave of his hand. She gasped for breath, blinking back frustrated tears. He watched her die, then waited there another 10 minutes, mind open to any sparks of ether. None came. A boom rolled across the city from the gates he'd left nearly an hour before. Dante backtracked at a jog. The plaza swung into view. A watermelon-sized stone hung in the air high above the no-man's land. An instant later, it smashed into the walls, stone splintering, vomiting shards across fleeing soldiers. "Oh, there you are!" Blaze pushed away from the merlin he'd been cowering behind, brushing dust from his doublet. "Go off to take a nap." "The usual. Just off saving all our lives." "Well, in case you haven't noticed, they have trebuchets." "So?" Dante said. "So, trebuchets are to walls what wild dogs are to unattended children." Dante shook his head and edged past a protective merlin. An arrow whisked past his head. He tried again. Far up the street, feeding into the square, three trebuchets stood in various postures of readiness. At one, soldiers strained against the long lever holding the sling, raising the counterweight back into position. Dante reached out with the nether and snapped one of the struts connecting the counterweight to the lever. Wood groaned and cracked. The counterweight gave way, booming against the ground. With the weight removed from the other end of the lever, the team of straining men sat down hard. Blaze laughed through his nose. "You're really not fair, you know that?" "I'm going to find some monks to take care of the others," Dante said. "Don't want to wear myself out too soon." The two monks he'd seen earlier were just past the hole the trebuchet had smashed through the wall's deck. Dante edged along the wreckage and directed the monks to focus on the two remaining siege engines' most vulnerable parts. Netha winged across the plaza, only to disperse in a sizzle of black and white sparks.
"I didn't do that," one of the monks said.
The other rolled his eyes.
"They stopped it, you dolt! Haven't you ever fought another sorcerer before?"
"Have you?"
"No, but Tobin has, and he told me—"
"Quiet down and try again," Dante said. "Every spark of ether they use to nullify you is one less spark they have to throw against the walls."
The monks turned back to the plaza, chagrined. Across the way, a man pulled the pin from a loaded trebuchet. Its firing lever whipped through the air, driven by the massive counterweight, slinging another head-sized rock through the air. The monks destroyed the device's lever while it was still vibrating. The rock landed short, whacking into the cobblestones 20 feet in front of the walls and ricocheting straight into their base with a sickly thwack. The monks' next attack on the siege engines was stymied by a sorcerer hidden somewhere in the buildings at the opposite end of the square. So was the one that followed. The remaining trebuchet got off one more shot before the monks knocked it into splinters. This back and forth continued through the next hour, resulting in little more than a few chunks taken out of the walls, several piles of kindling where trebuchets had once sat, and 7 exhausted monks. Archers fired back and forth. Shouts rang out across the city. The bells tolled 2 o'clock.
Dante and a large fraction of the soldiers on the wall switched places with the reserves below.
Along with Lyra and Blaze, he went to one of the square's public houses co-opted by the defenders. It felt good to be out of the sun. He sat, sore in his back and his elbow, and sipped an assortment of water, beer, and tea. Blaze towelled sweat from his moisture-flattened blonde hair.
"Does it count as a battle if my sword hasn't got any blood on it yet?"
Lyra patted his hand, making a face at its dampness.
"Patience, sweetness."
"They haven't had to fight rival sorcerers in generations," Dante said. "They'll adapt soon enough."
He no sooner said the words than a messenger burst into the pub, chest heaving. Someone handed him a beer, which he chugged in seconds, sleeving foam from his mouth. To Dante's incredulity, he explained the enemy had killed the few scouts manning an eastern section of the wall, then used the ether to carve a crude set of stairs into the side of the ingate. Hundreds of redshirts had swamped the wall, overwhelming the light resistance, until Ollivander rode in with his cavalry, dismounted, and retook it foot by foot. Once the king's men had been beaten back, Ollivander blasted out the lowest steps of the makeshift stairs, thwarting them. Blaze got his own taste of blood not long after. Cries rang out from the west. They rushed to the walls. A half mile from the gates, the attackers had brought in ladders and swarmed up the walls. 300 of the enemy had climbed up before Dante and the others joined a charging brigade of defenders. The fighting was close, vicious, angry. Boots splashed on bloody stones. Men fell from both sides of the walls, moaning in the streets. Arms and legs and spines shattered. Lyra left the fight with a deep slash to her left wrist. Dante retreated with her, sending the Netha to mend her parted flesh. They lost nearly as many men as the red shirts before they pushed them back and smashed the ladders. Yet they held. Their archers picked off enemy soldiers one by one, slaughtering the group that tried to wheel a battering ram up to the gates. Fires rose around the city. The plaza behind the inn gate smelled of blood and smoke and sweat. Dante heard Cav's lung had been pierced in a duel with another sorcerer. Ulev was tending him personally, but even if he lived, he'd be useless for the rest of the day, perhaps longer. The afternoon crawled on. The sun baked the blood to the stones. Soldiers began collapsing without wounds. They were brought to the tents for shade and beer and water. Beyond the gates, the red shirts extended a line of wooden walls towards the ingate. Narashtovic's archers set their arrows alight and let fly. As if the king's army had run out of ideas, they hung on the fringes of bow range, their numbers dwindled. As the sun's heat finally began to wane, bitter horns piped from the northeast side of the city. Dante's heart sank. Blaze's mouth hung half open.
That's the signal, isn't it? They're through the walls.
It's time to fall back to the citadel. Dante clutched his sweaty temples. Why isn't anyone sounding the retreat?
Aren't you the highest-ranking person here?
Dante scanned the walls. Archers fired sporadically. A trio of monks in their lightest robes kept an eye on the battlefield. A ways down the wall, Somber's thin, twitchy form was unmistakable, but there was no sign of Ollivander. Cav had been wounded, removed from action. The only others with seniority over him, Hart and Tarkin, were old men who hadn't held up well in the scalding afternoon. They'd been brought to the citadel to act as reserves. Callie, of course, was long gone. He called for the retreat. They'd practiced this, too. The subtle spread of orders through simple hand signals. While a skeleton crew remained at the walls to support the illusion nothing had changed, the rest jogged down into the square and gathered into formation. Dante passed word to the citadel guards commanding the mixed forces of soldiers and citizens. He and a small team would scout the route ahead. The main body of their forces, some 1,500 men or more, with more yet having shifted to the battle to the northeast, would follow them to the sealed citadel 3 minutes later, with the crew on the walls descending to follow another 3 minutes after that. Ideally, they would all be safely behind the citadel walls before the redshirts managed to break through the abandoned gate. Dante grabbed a monk and two guardsmen dressed in Narashtivik's black. With Blaze and Lyra, they headed north up the gentle slope toward the colossal spire of the cathedrals of Ivars and the citadel behind it. The shouts from the plaza at the inn gate faded, replaced by the dull roar of men and arms from somewhere to the north. The streets were otherwise silent. Pale faces stared from third-floor windows. A few thousand citizens remained, unarmed, isolated. What would happen to them as the king's men marched on Narashtivik's last defense? The tall row houses draped them in shooting shadows. The 5 o'clock sun came in at yellow angles, dazzling the glass windows of the finer shops. Up the street, a handful of red shirts sprinted across the pavement. Dante flattened against the row house, waiting for their footfalls to fade. He continued on, the pandemonium of battle echoing through the abandoned streets. He crested a small rise. The boulevard was a straight shot into the square between the Cathedral of Ivars and the sealed citadel. There, a mass of red-shirted men clamored around the still, open front gates, swords flashing against those of Narashtivik's soldiers.
"We're too late," Dante said.
Blaze flung out his hands.
"Why are the gates still open? What are they thinking?"
"They're waiting for us. If they wait much longer, they'll be waiting on Aron's doorstep instead." Blaze pointed at the sky.
"They'll never hear from us here, and if we get any closer, we'll be chopped into breakfast. Do that thing where you make stuff appear in the sky and tell them to close the damn gates. We'll be trapped out here."
"So what, dummy? Did you dig that tunnel for fun?" More red shirts surged into the square every second. Dante exhaled in a frustrated sigh. He sucked the nether from the shadows of the buildings and sent it straight for the sky above the citadel. In 50-foot letters, purple and twinkling, "Close the damn gates. Love, Dante," appeared in the air.
"I don't know," Blaze said. "Might be too subtle."
Dante turned to the monk and two soldiers who'd come with them. "Go back to the others. Tell them not to go to the citadel. They're to meet us at the Carnotarium instead."
"My lord,"
the monk bowed. The men ran back down the hill. Blaze gestured in the direction of the other hill on the north end of the city.
"Lead on, exalted one."
"I didn't establish the rules of propriety," Dante grumbled. At the citadel, the gates squeaked with a mighty grind of metal. The fighting below redoubled. Dante smiled. I hope you didn't just get us all killed.
That depends a lot on the effectiveness of your tunnel, doesn't it?
Lyra gestured forward. If you two don't quit jabbering, we're dead either way.
Sorry, love.
Blaze ran down a side street, then cut north to skirt the citadel from a distance. A cheer went up. Either they'd just lost, or the defenders had finished sealing the doors. The hill that bore the cemetery and the carnotarium swelled above the ingate. The northern door through the walls was open, deserted. A couple hundred corpses scattered the plaza on both sides. Clearly this hadn't been the site of the main battle. The roads beyond were just as desolate. The houses stopped. Dante slowed as he jogged to the grassy field leading to the carnotarium. Something stirred within the tall, yellow grass.
"Get down!" Blaze shouted.
Dante peered ahead, frowning. Blaze plowed into his back and tackled him to the ground. Two arrows whooshed overhead. Lyra rolled onto the dirt beside Blaze.
A lone oak stood 20 feet to Dante's left. He crawled for it, hidden beneath the grass. An arrow fired blindly through the stems. Dante flung himself behind the tree trunk.
Across the field, 3 men in nondescript green waited with bows bent in their hands. They loosed their arrows as soon as they saw the whites of Dante's eyes.
Arrows wrapped into the trunk.
Blaze burst from the grass, zigzagging toward the archers. Dante gaped in horror and called out to the nether. It slithered to him from leaves and grass and dirt. One archer took a shot at Blaze, firing wide. Lyra ran pell-mell behind him, eyes locked on the archer's hands. Dante slung a spike of shadows toward a man taking hurried aim at Blaze. The archer fell with a cry. Another took a quick shot at Blaze. As the man released, Blaze dived forward, landing on his shoulder and rolling through the grass. He popped up within sword range and lunged forward. Both his blades plunged into the archer's stomach. Blaze pivoted, using his swords as levers to put the dying man's body between him and a final scout. The man's arrow thunked wetly into the corpse's back. Lyra closed on him. He took a whack at her with his bow. She intercepted it with her wheeling left arm, rolling her forearm to absorb the blow, then grabbed the bow and yanked it forward.
The man leaned with it. Her sword found his throat.
"What were you thinking?" Dante called as he ran to them. "They had bows! The long things that fire other long things across long distances!"
"The tunnel's right around here, isn't it?" Blaze said.
One of the men groaned. Blaze stabbed him without looking down. "What if they'd found it and were running off to tell Cassander?
Then I'd seal it up."
"Yeah, after 1,000 men boiled out of the basements and clued you in. Come on, let's make sure this place is clear."
A cooling breeze ruffled the grass. Nothing else stirred the field or the hill. Inside the carnotarium, the entry to the tunnel was just as empty. The first of their troops arrived minutes later, led by the 2 guards and the monk.
"Get them inside as fast as you can," Dante said. "It's a straight shot from here to the citadel basements."
Dante lit one of the torches kept in the entry to the carnotarium and dropped into the tunnel. It was cool, moist. His boots echoed with every scrape. He alternated walking and jogging, preserving his sun and battle-flagged strength. Blaze frowned in the snapping torchlight.
"If this is what it's like down here, remind me to be buried above ground."
"What does that mean?"
Lyra said.
"Like, in the air?"
"Sure, just put me in a coffin and hang the coffin from a branch. Little kids can use me as a swing."
A draft puffed down the tunnel. Dante emerged into the gloom of the basements. Rats skittered among spilled grain and casks of wine. As he climbed the staircase to the ground floor of the keep, the sounds of battle met his ears. The courtyard was a sea of blood. Around the sealed gates, soldiers of Garsk and Narashtovik lay dead in equal measure. The defenders had already hauled an unknown quantity of the slain to a ghastly pile beneath one of the walls, but hundreds remained.